new CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Hands where we can see them!
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it up!
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome to Behind Enemy Lines, a Go Tigers 247 audio podcast. Listen in as we go in-depth with beat writers that cover Tiger opponents. What's the vibe around their team? What are the matchups to watch out for? Who will win the game? All these questions will be answered. Now, let's get to the show.
Welcome back to this week's episode of Behind Enemy Lines. This is episode number 8, and I'm excited because we've got Gary Smith is the beat writer for the Tulane football team for NOLA.com. He also is the publisher for the Wave Report, covering the Tulane athletic department. We got Gary on with us today, man. What's going on, Gary?
Doing pretty good. It's a different feeling covering a 6-1 football team at Tulane. It's been a few decades.
Well, I was going to ask you, because before we started recording, you mentioned that not only have you been covering the team since 2012, 2011, mm-hmm. but you grew up in New Orleans. Your parents are former students at Tulane. You went to games at the old Tulane Stadium back in the day as a child. Like, what has it been like? This year specifically covering a team that's very clearly having a historic season in terms of the success they're having?
Well, in terms of the home crowds, the crowds haven't arrived yet because usually that's a 1-year process. Tulane had such a rough year last year going 2-10. And then they had some momentum after beating Kansas State and had a decent sized crowd against Southern Miss. And that was the one game Tulane lost this year. So there weren't really that many people at the East Carolina game this last week. And I'm expecting a big uptick. This is homecoming for Memphis. I think you're going to see a much, much bigger crowd this Saturday. But yeah, it's just always, as you know, it's easier covering a team that's winning than a team that's losing. It gets tough. I mean, there's only so many things you can ask. in a year like Tulane had last year, when honestly Willie Fritz thought he had his best team going into last year, and then all hell broke loose with the Hurricane Ida that forced Tulane to evacuate to Birmingham for a month. They never really regained their equilibrium off of that. They returned almost everybody from that team, and so you're seeing the fruits of that this year. You can basically just throw out what happened last year, but this is still a huge jump, 6-1, from what Tulane was doing 3 years before that, which was basically going 6-6 and barely qualifying for bowl games.
I mean, it's crazy. You think about the last couple of years, specifically in college football, college sports as a whole, with the pandemic, with COVID, with the restrictions and everything that was in place there, and then in terms of, New Orleans being where it is located, getting hit with another hurricane, Hurricane Ida last year. Is it surprising to you? Like, what does it tell you about this team that they were able to kind of come back from that, right?
Yeah, it's not surprising to me that they came back from it, but I'd be lying if I said I foresaw what's happened with the 6-1 record. I picked Tulane to go 7-5 before the year started, but I also said I thought they could go anywhere from 4-8 to 8-4 just looking at the schedule. And I said that, Houston was a sure loss, Kansas State was a sure loss, and Cincinnati was a sure loss, and they were going to have to do well in the other games. They're 2-0 in those sure losses that I picked at the beginning of the year. And the real breakthrough win was the Kansas State game, because Kansas State's a good team, and Willie Fritz in his coaching career had never beaten a Power Five conference team, no matter where he was. He'd come close a lot of times, came close to beating Oklahoma last year. But Tulane went into Manhattan, Kansas, and just was the better team that day, and really physically beat Kansas State at their own game, just stopped Deuce Vaughn, who'd had 10 straight 100-yard games, shut him down, stopped Adrian Martinez's run. Nobody else has been able to do that really this year. And that physical ability to hang with a team like that and just beat a team like that at their own game was something I had not seen before from Tulane. That was really the time that I realized, hey, this could really be a different season for these guys.
Was Tulane active in the transfer portal over the offseason?
Yeah, more so than in the past, and I just wrote a big feature on that last week. This time they really hit on the portal. They got 10 guys from the portal, and 9 of them are huge contributors on this football team. That's a huge difference. I think the key guy they got out of them all is Patrick Jenkins, was a New Orleans kid who was a big recruit coming out of high school, went to TCU, played a lot at TCU, wasn't a full-time starter. But he came in, and this was after Jeffrey Johnson, who was a 4-year starter for Tulane and also a huge recruit, left in the portal to go to Oklahoma. First guy they've really ever lost a significant player in the portal. And they play the same position. They're not the same type of player, but I actually think that Patrick Jenkins is a better player. He defends the run and the pass. He doesn't take plays off like Jeffrey Johnson did at times. Jeffrey Johnson was a little heavy, would get tired at times, and just having, when you have a guy like that in the middle, it makes all the difference in the world. And Tulane's run defense has just been outstanding this year. And it all starts with what your defensive tackles are doing. But it's not just him. Their two best wide receivers, Day-Day McDougal from Maryland, he played with Michael Pratt, Tulane's quarterback, in high school. And they're best friends. He went to Maryland, didn't have a lot of success there. He transferred to Tulane specifically to play with Michael Pratt. And Lawrence Keyes, another New Orleans product who went to Notre Dame, had some injury problems there. He came back. The wide receivers this year, that's the most improved position on the team. I would say last year Tulane might have had the worst set of wide receivers in terms of performance in the FBS. They just couldn't get the job done, and they've gotten just incredibly better. And so that's 3 guys, and they got 6 more guys contributing. So it was huge. And they've done the portal before, but they've never had anywhere even remotely close to the impact that they had this year.
Well, how important has it been for Tulane to be able to go into the portal, add, like you said, 10 players, and none of which are contributors on the field this year, but bringing back a quarterback like Michael Pratt, who is an all-conference, preseason all-conference quarterback, just, you know, one of the standards in the AEC in terms of quarterback play. What has his play been like this year? Have you seen a development in his game even more so?
Yeah, he was up and down earlier in the year, but the last 2 games he had a career high in passing against Houston, and no, he didn't play against Houston, but he's had a career high in passing in two straight games against East Carolina, and then he broke it again against South Florida. He was not healthy last year. He took a bunch of some hellacious hits against Oklahoma, then went into the Ole Miss game, and in the last play of a total blowout, last play he played of a total blowout, he landed on his shoulder. And he played through the shoulder injury the rest of the year, but he wasn't the same guy. And that's another reason that Tulane fell off the table last year, because he was just not, he couldn't be effective because he wasn't healthy. He's healthy now. He hurt his shoulder again and missed the Houston game, but it turned out it wasn't a significant injury. And like I said, he's come back and had his 2 best games. He was always a terrific leader. Yeah, at Tulane in the past, they've had guys who were at Tulane for various reasons. 1, it was a chance to play where they might not be able to play somewhere else. And 2, sometimes their parents wanted them to get that degree. They didn't have those unbelievably competitive, die-to-win guys. And that's what Michael Pratt is at quarterback. So that's huge to start with. But now he's playing like that. He's playing like the preseason all-conference pick that he was expected to be, and that's made all the difference in the world, because he was a little up and down before having to sit out the Houston game with a shoulder injury.
Let's go to that Houston game for 1 second, because I think obviously, you know, most pundits placed Houston as the top team in the conference at the beginning of the year. They were voted, I think, to win the whole thing, win the AEC, and, you know, ranked in the top 25, and obviously have had kind of an up and down year, but, you know, teams kind of get amped up and lit up when they're knowing they're about to play the team that has been picked to win it all. Tulane came into that game and obviously was down Michael Pratt. Started Justin, is it Ibieta? Is that how you say his name?
Yes.
Ibieta. He went out, and then Kai Horton came in and started to play third string quarterback for Tulane. Yeah. It was kind of eye-opening, I think, for everybody, mm-hmm. and maybe even for you as well, to see Tulane be able to do what you guys did to Houston with a third string quarterback. What does that tell you about the team that on their third string quarterback, y'all still beat the consensus top team in the AAC?
No, that was another. The Kansas State game to me was the eye opener because of the quality of the team. Houston's up and down, but there's no way. First of all, Houston playing in Houston had been a house of horrors for Tulane under Willie Fritz. Four years ago, Tulane actually had a chance to win the AAC West when they went to Houston. Tulane won five of their last six games in the regular season that year. The one game they didn't win was like 47-17 loss to a Houston team, but that was the only game they won.
Right.
And like that Houston team imploded. That was the game where Ed Oliver got into a fight with his head coach on the sidelines, and Tulane just completely capitulated in that game. So this is a place that's been just hadn't been kind to Tulane at all. And then to have Justin Ibieta go out. Now, Kai Horton, he did start against Cincinnati last year when Tulane also had injuries at quarterback. So he had that experience, but that was his only experience. And he basically jammed a finger and broke a finger in the first quarter of that game and tried to play through it. So it was stunning how well he played. And his numbers weren't always that great, but he threw a couple of passes in that game that are as good as you're ever going to see. His first touchdown pass in the first half, he was rolling to his right, had a tiny window, threw it right between two guys for a touchdown. And then they did nothing. They had three first downs in six possessions from that point of the game all the way until they got down seven with about 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And he made about five great passes. They go straight down the field, send it to overtime, hold Houston to a field goal. And then he makes another great pass on the winning touchdown. And that's just a game that Tulane in the past had no chance to win in that situation. And that said a lot too.
So, you know, a lot of people in Memphis know about New Orleans. They've been to New Orleans. It's a destination city that's pretty close to where we live. So it's, you know, everybody knows a lot about New Orleans. And I would look at, when you think about cities that are around each other, you look at St. Louis and you look at Memphis and you look at New Orleans, and there's a lot of similarities between those three cities. You know, just a lot of similarities. But have you noticed, like, and you mentioned it even earlier a little bit about the fan involvement and the support that the Tulane Green Wave, you know, get to experience every single week. But, you know, New Orleans fans, like the sports world is kind of separated amongst, you know, professional football, professional basketball, mm-hmm. Tulane, couple of colleges, things like that. With this success that Tulane is having, have you noticed an increase in traffic around the Tulane football team? Is there a kind of an uptick in fan engagement and things like that?
Honestly, just now, when the poll came out yesterday and Tulane was ranked 25th in the Associated Press in the coaches poll, because Tulane had not been in the top 25 of either poll since their undefeated season in 1998. And I'm talking about not for 1 week. That's a 24-year gap. I think there were only three teams in the FBS that had been playing that long that had not been ranked in I mean, it was in that span. It was in one of, like, New Mexico State, those type of teams. And that's how long it had been. And when you go that long without real winning, you lose your fan base. You lose the casual fan. They're just not there. I think there's been a lot of buzz around them getting ranked 25th, especially with Tulane fans. They're ahead of LSU. LSU's 26th in the AP poll. That hadn't happened in a long time either. And so I think we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what the attendance is this Saturday for Memphis, because most of the stadium was empty for the East Carolina game. Now, there was part, it was a fall break for the students, so they weren't around, but there just weren't very many people at that game. They sold out the very first game in their on-campus stadium against Georgia Tech in 2014, and they've never come close to selling it out again. And it's a 30,000 seat stadium at most. I think there's a chance this week that you'll see a pretty packed stadium. And if Tulane keeps winning, because you got to keep winning, I think you'll finally see that actual real, like, it being like a real college football interest in this team that just simply hasn't been there since they went undefeated 24 years ago.
So Memphis and Tulane have a little bit of a history playing football against each other. Obviously, you know, this will be the 38th game in the series between Memphis and Tulane. Memphis leads the series right now 24-13 with one tie. How do you think Tulane, its coaching staff, the players, and the fans are looking at this week's game against Memphis?
It'll be interesting to see, because after Tulane beat Kansas State, they said all the right things, but then they played Southern Miss at home, actually jumped out to a 14-0 lead right off the bat. But then when Southern Miss came back, it really looked like the players were not expecting it, were unprepared for it, and went flat because they were kind of surprised that they were having to fight hard for the game. They'd kind of gotten too giddy with that win and thought they had arrived. Now they're in the top 25, which is a huge deal here, because again, when you haven't had it happen in 24 years, that's a significant event. And Memphis is their first opponent after that. And yet they're probably coming off their, other than the Southern Miss game, they're probably coming off their worst performance against South Florida on Saturday. Really, it wasn't trending well for Tulane in the first half, because Jerry Bohannon, the South Florida quarterback, was having his way with Tulane, passing and running. South Florida had taken a lead. They get the ball back. He goes on a 9-yard run, hurts his shoulder, and he's gone for the game. And that was it, because their backup quarterback had no chance, and Tulane won. So it was the first time the defense has shown any cracks at all this year. So it'll be interesting to see. This is a really good football team. As Willie Fritz likes to say, when they come 100% invested in the game, they're absolutely not talented enough to just show up and play well without that investment, because their talent level, although they're really experienced, they're still not at the level of real top teams, top to bottom. So they have to bring it every single week. And I think because Memphis is the opponent, we'll probably see that, but it will be interesting to see how the players handle all the attention that's really coming to them for the first time with that top 25 ranking.
Well, you mentioned to me before we started recording that you had actually watched the last two Memphis games against Houston and against East Carolina. Just based on your perspective, like what are you expecting in terms of this Memphis team coming into this game against Tulane?
It'll be interesting, because, you know, the last time I did a lot of media before a Memphis game was 3 years ago, when Tulane was going to Memphis with a 5-1 record. And that year, actually, Tulane was one spot out of the top 25. I did radio. I predicted that Tulane would win that game. I think ESPN Game Day, half of their crew, they picked the game. Half of them picked Tulane to win the game. And then the game started and Memphis just completely out-athleted Tulane. It was a complete mismatch, and Tulane never was just simply the better team. That hadn't been the case when they played in New Orleans, but Memphis still has the skill position, but they've got a good quarterback. They've got a good passing game, and that's the test for Tulane this week. So I'm really not sure what to expect. I will say though, the biggest difference between the two teams that I see is tackling. Tulane's one of the best tackling teams I've ever seen. And I'm talking college, but it's unbelievable how good this team tackles and how fundamentally solid they are. Memphis, not so much. and that's the bubble screens. It used to be, I mean, Memphis could do anything they wanted 3 years ago and they were going to score, but the bubble screens that teams used to run against Tulane that would turn into 60-yard touchdowns, that doesn't happen at all anymore. East Carolina had a whole game plan based on that 2 weeks ago and scored 9 points, because that's not happening. You've got to go long on this Tulane team to beat them, and we'll see if Memphis is capable. But Memphis has the skill position players to certainly give themselves a chance, and just the passing scheme to give themselves a chance, because that has been typically Tulane's Achilles heel in the past.
So is that one of the matchups you're looking forward to seeing, is the Tulane secondary versus Memphis passing attack?
Yeah, and Tulane secondary is really experienced. They've got Macon Clark at nickelback. He's a fifth-year senior who's been starting for 3.5 years. Larry Brooks at safety, he's a fifth-year senior who's been starting for 3.5 years. Lummy Young, one of their transfer portal guys from Duke, had played, you know, thousands and thousands of plays at Duke before coming to Tulane. One of their only young guys is Jaden Kennedy, who was a cornerback who started every game as a true freshman last year. The second play of his career, he intercepted Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma. So they've got the experience in the secondary, but they gave up. South Florida was hitting them. Tulane hadn't given up big plays at all this year. In fact, the fewest of over 30 yards of any team in the country, and South Florida hit them with about three or four almost in a row in the second quarter. So if Memphis isn't going to be able to run on Tulane, and the only way they run is if Tulane is completely selling out to stop the pass and is just allowing them to run. It's all going to be based on can Memphis hit big plays against Tulane secondary. And I still need to see a couple more games from this Tulane secondary to know if they're really, because I still remember that game 3 years ago, just the speed factor. It was just it looked like every single Memphis skill position player was just a lot faster than every single Tulane skill position player. And I want to see how that plays out this week.
Well, if I can be, just transparent in what I've seen from the Tigers this year, you're talking about a team that had Antonio Gibson. Calvin Austin III, guys that are NFL level speed and ability to escape. And right now, I think that's one of the biggest struggles that the Tigers are having is they have big wide receivers that can catch the ball, but they can't get separation, right? Like there's not an overwhelming sense of speed on the team, even in the running backs, the receivers. A lot of it is just try to get open and Seth make the perfect pass, And so I think that's why you see some of the ups and downs and ebbs and flows for the Tigers is there are certain drives where Seth and the receivers are on the same page and he will absolutely dime a defense up, he did that in the final drive against ECU to tie the game.
That was an impressive drive.
Was that not that was Seth and the receivers at their finest. Mm-hmm. It was the third quarter that you see and you're like, nobody's getting open. And when they are open, they're dropping the balls, it definitely is I think Seth is definitely missing, like any team would, a guy like Calvin Austin who can get open and blow past anybody on the field. And when he catches it, it's an 80 yard touchdown run anytime, any given point. But in terms of the Tulane offense versus the Memphis defense, what are some matchups you're looking forward to seeing, on that side of the ball?
Well, first of all, Tajay Spears is looking forward to this game because they still haven't stopped him from from last year's game, and he really is. He's kind of an interesting guy because he had a horrendous ACL tear. Like there's ACL tears and then there's the ACL tear that he had against Southern Miss 2 years ago in September. And he thought about quitting football. It was so hard for him to come back. And then last year, the first half, I really think he's one of the most talented running backs in the country. And last year, the first half of the year, he wasn't really doing a whole lot, started picking it up, had a couple of 100-yard games, but the game against Memphis, you saw him. And obviously Memphis had a lot to do with that, but you saw him in full flight of what he gained 250 yards. And then this last week, South Florida tied the game against Tulane in the third quarter. And the next play, he hits a 75-yard touchdown run. I think you're going to see a lot of him in this game, but he's still some weeks. He doesn't always seem right. Like the funny thing is when Tulane beat Kansas State, he was almost used as a decoy. There was something slightly off on him on that game. They used him in Wildcat some, but they actually used their backup running back, Iverson Celestine, more than Spears. But and then the Houston game was all about Spears. But I think he's the first guy to watch because Memphis is going to have to prove they can slow him down because they couldn't slow him down at all last year. But again, this passing game, the receivers, they're just so different. Tulane lost that game to Memphis last year because they couldn't throw. And again, Pratt wasn't healthy, so that made a factor. But the receivers just couldn't get separation against anybody last year. And now the two new transfers are their two best receivers. And they returned almost everybody else, and they got better. So it's a balanced offense. You can't just stop the running game and figure you've got the beat on Tulane because they can throw too. It's both. I look for Spears first. But if he's not having the same type of game that he did last year, Tulane can easily throw the ball on almost every down and be successful.
So let's do this. Let's do a hypothetical. Let's say you're at the stadium on Saturday. Tulane has won the game. It's the end of the game. Tulane has actually won the game, which they're coming in favored to win the game this year. You get the box score. And you're looking at the box score. What is the trend, or the stat, or whatever that you're looking at to say this is why Tulane won the game?
Yeah, first I'm looking to see if Memphis how many plus 20 yard plays Memphis had, because it's just hard to, it's hard to drive the length of the field without big plays in college football consistently. And that's the way Tulane's been playing all year. And again, I can't emphasize enough this tackling that Tulane's doing, because it sort of came out of nowhere. I mean, Willie Fritz has always preached it, but they rally to the ball so well that even if the first guy doesn't bring a guy down, there's not an open space after that. And up until the two possessions in a row against USF, teams just weren't getting any big plays against this defense. So that would be the first thing. I would assume that Tulane had held the big plays down. And then the second thing would be the balance on offense. Did Tulane, because really the USF game was the first time Tulane's running game and passing game have clicked at the same time. And I feel like that's probably going to happen a lot more in the second half of the year, because Michael Pratt's healthy and Tajay Spears is just a sensational running back. So those are the two things I'm looking for. Balance. If Tulane wins, balance on offense and limiting the big plays. And if they do that, assuming there's not a big turnover advantage for Memphis or something like that, I think Tulane will come out with the win.
Listen, Gary, thank you, man. It's always a pleasure to talk to someone who's not only covered the team for a long time, but has been in the city that they're covering and just understands the tone and tenor of the college and the kids and everybody who's there. So I really appreciate you joining me.
Thanks for having me on. I love being on.
Thank you for listening to Behind Enemy Lines. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating wherever you download your podcasts. If you are interested in content all about the University of Memphis Tiger Athletics, hop over to www.gotigers247.com. Also, you can join the Go Tigers 247 family by signing up for our VIP membership.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.